On Monday, the United States government made an unprecedented move against Iran.
I am announcing our intent to designate the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, including its Quds Force, as a foreign terrorist organization, in accordance with Section 219 of the Immigration and Nationality Act.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo there. This new label for Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the IRGC, goes into effect in 1 week and represents the first time the U.S. has ever officially labeled part of another government's military a terrorist organization.
This designation is a direct response to an outlaw regime and should surprise no one.
The label imposes sanctions on the financial assets of the IRGC, and in response, Iran designated the United States military as a sponsor of terror. The moves are just the latest signs of escalating tensions between the U.S. and Iran in recent months. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. I have two people with me to walk us through the Trump administration's decision. Robin Wright is a distinguished fellow at the Wilson Center and contributing writer at The New Yorker. Robin, nice to have you back on.
Great to be with you.
And Farnaz Fasihi is an Iranian-American journalist and senior writer for The Wall Street Journal. Welcome, Farnaz.
Thank you for having me.
So, Farnaz, let's start with you. What exactly is the IRGC? Is it like other militaries when we think of military?
Not quite. The IRGC was formed after the Iranian Revolution in 1979, mainly with the responsibility to secure Iran's borders and safeguard the revolution, because they felt that they were threatened and they needed a more elite force, a special forces within the establishment to protect Iran. It is not a militia. It is an armed force very much within the regime of the Islamic Republic. But gradually over the past 40 years, the role of IRGC has evolved significantly. If you look at Iran today, it is no longer just a clerical regime. It is a military regime run by the IRGC. The IRGC dominate the economy. They dominate policy. They dominate trade. They dominate every sector of Iranian society. They are extremely intertwined with the government, and it's very difficult to separate the two.
Robin, what is it that the IRGC has done that warrants the Trump administration labeling it as a terrorist organization?
The IRGC has multiple branches. It has its own army, navy, and air force, but it also has a wing that has been the most active across the Middle East. It's called the Quds Force, and it was involved in supporting the regime of President Assad in Syria, for example. It has been very instrumental in supporting Shiite militias in Iraq. Its outreach to Hezbollah has been fundamental in the nurturing and forming of what is the most, perhaps, expansive militia, Shiite militia, that's now has branches across the Middle East. So it's been engaged in fostering and supporting others, but it's also in the past been instrumental in encouraging or facilitating attacks on the United States and its facilities. In Lebanon in 1983 and 84, the embryonic form of Hezbollah attacked two American embassies and the Marine compound. And the attack on the Marine compound still ranks to this day as the largest single loss of U.S. military life in a single incident since Iwo Jima during World War II. It was also involved in supporting militias that are responsible, according to the fact sheet put out by the White House yesterday, for 603 American deaths in Iraq by, again, facilitating weaponry to militias that were fighting the U.S. presence during its 8-year occupation. And so it has been very active in trying to check American influence or power on the ground in places that are important to the United States.
And does labeling this organization a terrorist group, Robin, does that give the administration any power? Does it make it easier to change the rules of engagement with Iran, or is it just a label?
Well, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards have been sanctioned many times before, whether specifically by individuals or branches or some of its economic outlets. I'm not clear that this is going to go much further. The real question I think that's out there and it hasn't been answered is, what is the U.S. intent? Is it to use the labeling of the IRGC as a terrorist group as a means or a form of justifying some kind of attack on it or its leadership, or to justify, for example, if there's some kind of encounter in the Persian Gulf where there have often been very close calls with Iranian Revolutionary Guard patrol boats? Is it something that the U.S. now has grounds to do things militarily? The big danger, I think, is that the United States has about 23,000 troops in key countries where the Revolutionary Guards are also very active. We have 2,000 in Syria still, more than 5,000 in Iraq, and at least 14,000 in Afghanistan. One of the reasons the Pentagon was so opposed to this was, first of all, does it make U.S. troops more vulnerable in these countries? But also, what is the danger that other countries where special forces are engaged, that they may decide also to declare the United States a terrorist group, as the Iranians have now done? They've declared that Central Command, which is the branch which is deployed in the Middle East and South Asia, is a terrorist group. So this is the kind of thing that is very provocative. And the question, I think, among a lot of Iran experts is the goal really regime change? Is it some kind of bigger confrontation or to justify kinetic action? Or is it really a political move trying to pressure Iran back to the negotiating table, which I don't think this move will do?
Farnaz, how about Iranian civilians? What could the impact of this be on them?
Because the IRGC is involved in every sector of Iranian society, this could unintentionally criminalize a lot of ordinary Iranians. If you are a young male Iranian and you've been drafted to do your military service, the lottery system could place you within an IRGC unit for that mandatory service. So then are you labeled a terrorist? If you are a manufacturer in Iran or an industrialist and you're producing goods and the IRGC buys it for one of their businesses or constructions, even residential complexes, are you then aiding terrorists? I find that the overlap of IRGC within Iranian society is such that it is very easy to see how ordinary innocent Iranians could get caught up in this. I would like to also mention something that Robin addressed. This move by the U.S., the goal of it is not clear. If the goal is to bring Iranians to the negotiating table to get a better Iran nuclear deal, as President Trump has pledged since his campaign, this is not going to achieve that goal. What it will do is it will strengthen Iran's hardliners who have long advocated you can't trust the United States. And it will also radicalize the moderate voices. Yesterday, the deputy foreign minister of Iran, Abbas Araghchi, who's considered a moderate, who was one of the main negotiators in the nuclear deal, said that from now on, every American base in the Middle East is considered a terrorist base, and every American serviceman was considered a terrorist. These are pretty startling words coming from a moderate voice within the Iranian government and a deputy foreign minister.
Also, Farnaz, as we know, the U.S. and Iranian militaries are often, they work close together. In the case of ISIS, they fought the same adversary. What does this change, if anything?
Well, it would make it very hard for the U.S. to even indirectly engage with Iran on common goals like battling ISIS or terrorism or stabilizing Iraq or now negotiating to bring peace to Yemen. Iran and U.S. have had these conversations through whether the U.N. or through intermediaries or the Iraqis when these issues have come up. And it's now hard to see how the U.S. would engage at any level if the other side is involved in IRGC. And as I said before, IRGC is involved in everything. There are Iranian parliamentarians who are members of the IRGC. There are diplomats and ambassadors all around the world that were members of IRGC. So are you going to purge them? Are they going to be deported? It opens up a lot of questions. But the biggest question, as Robin pointed out, is what is the goal here? Is the goal to put Iran and the U.S. on a collision path and provoke a military attack? Or is the goal to rein in Iran and have it retreat from the Middle East? This is not going to make the IRGC retreat.
I also want to note here that there are several members of the Trump inner circle, if you will, Rudy Giuliani among them, who have taken paid speaking gigs with an Iranian organization called the People's Mujahideen, or the MEK. Let's take a listen to a clip that we have from one of Giuliani's speeches.
The changes in Washington are very exciting. You saw on this stage, you saw John Bolton. You remember John Bolton. He's going to be President Trump's national security advisor. You think he changed his mind? No, in fact, if anything, John Bolton has become more determined that there needs to be regime change in Iran, that the nuclear agreement needs to be burned, and that you need to be in charge of that country.
Robin, who are the People's Mujahideen, and what is the involvement here with Bolton and Giuliani?
They're known as the MEK, and this is a group that was on the U.S. list of terrorist organizations until 2012. It had been involved earlier in attacks on Americans, the death of Americans, both diplomats and military officials, and it sued to get off the terrorism list. It has every year held an annual rally in Paris. It's a strange group. It is Islamist. It's a cult, basically, and has very little support inside Iran today, even though it was originally part of the revolution. It split early on, and it went on to have a camp in Saddam Hussein's Iraq. He was supported financially and in terms of weaponry by Saddam Hussein. And after the U.S. intervention, then they dispersed around the world. And one of their major operating centers is in Paris, and they have an annual conference every year, and they bring people over to endorse the MEK. It's one of the few visible things the group actually does. And it has had very influential names come to Paris to endorse it, including John Bolton for 8 years was a keynote speaker, and Giuliani has been very visible for more than a decade in doing work with the MEK. But others from both parties, whether it's Bill Richardson, Tom Ridge, Patrick Kennedy, Louis Free, former head of the FBI. And it's always been mystifying to me why Americans would support this group, which doesn't really resonate inside Iran and would not be the viable alternative. Another question all of the new actions taken by the Trump administration bring up is, you know, where do they see an alternative to the current regime, if indeed they want regime change? Because it's striking that even though a lot of Iranians are very unhappy with their own government, whether it's because of corruption, employment problems, its intervention in other parts of the region, that you have not seen a movement in a decade that could be a challenge to the government or replace the government. In other words, there's no seed there for a counter-revolution. And the MEK is an exiled group now. And it, at its last rally, many of the people who attended weren't even Iranian. There was a very interesting piece done by The Guardian how they offered 25 euros and a bus ticket to Paris for their convention. So I don't think it resonates, but it's a group that has mysterious resources to buy out a lot of prominent Western official to make it look like it has some credibility.
There's another interesting part of this story, and Farnar is wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about this here. The Trump Organization did finalize a deal for Trump Tower Baku in Azerbaijan, and some of the people that the president was dealing with at the time were members of the IRGC. How does that square with this most recent declaration by the president, Farnaz?
Well, that could jeopardize the Trump Organization if that, in fact, they were, as we saw the New Yorker report, involved in any business dealing that involved the IRGC. The IRGC, through their conglomerates, development conglomerates and economic conglomerates, have a lot of investments in the Caucasus, in Georgia, in Azerbaijan. They were in the Gulf, and because of the sanctions, moved up toward investing in the Caucasus. We did a story about how involved they were in Georgia's economy. And I think that the New Yorker article pointed out that the Trump Organization knew that one of the business partners was involved with the IRGC, and that could potentially be then place the president's company in jeopardy of, I don't know, violating a terrorist rule that he has imposed. I mean, there are all sorts of consequences.
And Robin, last question for you. Does this week's move by the United States and the Trump administration change the balance of power in the region at all?
On paper, it doesn't really change very much. I think that there will be a number of people within the U.S. military deeply concerned about where they can deploy, where the Iranians, they have to watch in every direction now, everything they do, for fear that there will be some effort by the Revolutionary Guards or its proxies to say, hey, we're more powerful than you calculated, and we're going to put the United States in its place. You know, this really escalates the level of tensions in the region about each other. And we all have to watch and see if that ends up playing out in some kind of provocation and a confrontation that I don't think anybody really wants.
Robin Wright is a Wilson Center Distinguished Fellow and contributing writer at The New Yorker. And Farnaz Fasihi is an Iranian-American journalist and senior writer for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks to you both.
Thank you for having us.